Ramesh Ranganathan's comedy career began by accident. Whilst he had always loved comedy, the former maths teacher never thought he would be trading the schoolyard for the stand-up stage. Over a decade later, the Sri Lankan British father of three is inviting audiences to step into his shoes with his sold-out shows across the world.
When I started doing stand-up, majority of the people that are in the room are white people, you know? And so whatever you're saying, you are informing their view on us as people. I'll be honest with you, when I first started, you know, you make self-deprecating jokes. And sometimes you make self-deprecating jokes about your culture and people laugh, and then you sort of think, no, I don't know how comfortable I feel about where that laugh is coming from.
Welcome back to SBS Spice. I'm Suhaila Sharif. If you're fresh to SBS Spice, you can find us wherever you find your podcasts. Ramesh is now a staple in the international comedy scene, but the applause didn't come without having his hustle to break new ground. As a comedian, actor, and entertainer, Ramesh has mastered the art of storytelling for the masses, but being a one-man show assigns him the responsibility of representing his community on every stage he is on. From his humble beginnings in Crawley, England, to how his sons keep him on his toes, I had the opportunity to speak to Ramesh while he was hustling in Sydney to keep the Aussie laughs going. Let's jump in. Ramesh, thank you so much for joining me on SBS Spice today. Over your life, you've taken on many roles. You were a maths teacher, a comedian, an actor, Ranga the Lazy-Eyed Assassin. You are number 7th on a UK Sexiest Man Alive list. And you played a mouse in Cinderella. You're now here in Australia for your stand-up tour Hustle. Tell me, what has kept your hustle going in the global entertainment industry?
I don't. It's a very good question. I don't really know the answer, to be honest with you. I mean, I sort of feel like you can get caught up with. I think you can get caught up with, like, what is my path and what is my eventual goal, and I've got to do this so that I can do this, and I've got to do this so that I can move on to that. And one of the things that I've kind of learned is just to take every individual thing and just focus on doing that as well as you possibly can. And then, fingers crossed, everything else will take care of itself. You know, I think if you get too caught up in this is my ambition, and if this doesn't go well, then the next thing might not go, I might not get the next. I think if you can get so caught up in that, but I feel like for me personally, I think, you know, if I'm doing a stand-up show, all I'm thinking about is I just want this stand-up show to go as well as possible. If I'm appearing on SBS Spice, all I'm thinking is I want this chat to be as good as it can possibly be. I think, you know, if you get too caught up in, you know, what is the long-term goal? I think it can be a bit overwhelming. So I just kind of think, you know, do what you can, enjoy it as much as you can, and then just see what happens. That's always been my motto.
Amazing. I feel like we're always trying to think one step ahead these days. Everyone's really caught up in the hustle, as they say, but I think the hustle just carries you forward. You don't really have to think twice about it, right? And so I'm still amazed by how you went from a maths teacher to a comedian, and you started comedy while you were still teaching, right? So was this a leap of faith, or was this something that was always on the cards of you to become a comedian?
No, I mean, I loved comedy from when I was a kid. I was in I had this experience of when I was growing up, my mum and dad, you know, I'm from a Sri Lankan background. So like my mum and dad, I think even for Sri Lankan parents, pretty laid back. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, I mean, don't get me wrong, my mum wanted me to, she didn't want me to become a comedian. She, you know, she wanted me to go into medicine, you know, like classic cliche kind of Asian parent stuff. But we used to go to obviously I'm much older than you, so this you will not even understand what I'm talking about now. But we used to go and, like, when I was a kid, we'd go to the local like video rental place, right? And pick up like a couple of films, and each of us would get a choice. And I basically got into Eddie Murphy, right? And then I started watching his stand-up from then. So I've been a stand-up fan. I've watched nothing but comedy for such a long time, since I was a kid, like loads and loads of it. And then when I was teaching, I was really enjoying teaching. It's a great job, and I really respect teachers, and I think it's an amazing thing to do. But I never thought I was going to end up becoming a comedian. What I thought was, is I'm going to have a go at doing comedy as like a hobby, in the same way that you might take up tennis or something like that. I was just like, it's going to be something I do once every now and again, just to kind of scratch that itch and have a go at it. And so I started doing like little open mic gigs where, you know, there'd be like eight people in the room or something. Then I'd have to pay to come in, and you just start, you know, be all these people that are just starting out doing stand up. And after I did one of the gigs, one of the promoters came up to me and said, "Oh, you know, like, you should definitely do this for a job. Like, you should be a you should look into becoming a comedian." And so I started just doing more and more gigs, and then it kind of happened by accident. I was carried on gigging while I was teaching, and then I was at a gig, and an agent saw me and just came up to me after the gig and said, "We'd really like to represent you." And then it kind of went from there, really. So it was kind of almost accidental. I think there's another world in which I would have carried on teaching and been perfectly happy. It wasn't like I didn't like teaching, but this comedy thing kind of happened by accident. And so, yeah, I kind of feel like there's another Ramesh in a sliding doors moment that could be like doing comedy on the side, but it's like a teacher by day, you know? So I feel very lucky.
Yeah, it's crazy how sometimes the things that we don't, you know, think twice about end up carrying us forward and like getting us to places we never knew we could get to. And I mean, to make you feel a bit younger, I also had the experience of going to my local video rental store and also watching Eddie Murphy.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
I don't know if that makes you feel older, but like at least if it makes you feel younger, I'm glad.
I was so nervous, Hala, that I was going to say this thing. You're going to go, "What? What are you talking about?"
I grew up in that weird in between generation. So I'm like, right. Okay, this makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I also watched Eddie Murphy growing up, and now I'm sitting here doing my thing, but you're taking to world stages. I mean, more power to you. Interesting that you bring up Eddie Murphy, because, again, like, I, growing up, didn't have many South Asian comedians I looked up to. Was there anyone when you were starting off in the comedy scene that inspired you to, you know, work and make this gold out of, you know, the fact that at one point it wasn't considered to be part of your career?
I think that you know, when I was younger, and you definitely will be too young to know this show, and also it's a British show, but there was a TV show called Goodness Gracious Me, and it was like all brown cast, and they did like comedy sketches about what it was like to be brown in the UK, and they would talk about going to the local English restaurant and asking for the blandest food possible. And, you know, it was like all these observations that I think as a brown kid growing up, you sort of go, they're talking about stuff that I recognize, you know, in a way that nothing else on TV was. And then I remember thinking, I wonder what the next thing will be. And the truth is that, you know, they did another show, Kumar's at number 42. But then after that, there wasn't anything really. And I remember sort of when I was sort of thinking about doing stand-up, I didn't actively think about this, but I do think in the UK, and I don't know what it's like in Australia, to be honest with you, but in the UK, people from brown backgrounds are just underrepresented in entertainment and media. It's just not a normal path. And I think that's changed now. A little bit, but I feel like when I started doing stand-up, I couldn't really, you know, there's a British Indian comedian called Paul Chowdhury who's been around for a while, and obviously there's people like Russell Peters who I kind of knew of, but I feel like it wasn't like I was looking at all of the brown, so many brown comedians that I was looking to follow in the path, but as actually a white friend of mine who, a comedian called Sean Walsh, who was saying to me, I'd been doing, and this sounds a bit worthy, you know, it sounds like I think a lot of myself. I don't at all, actually. My self-esteem is incredibly low. But he was saying to me, you know, I'd just taken over hosting a show, League of Their Own. And he said to me, "Ron, like, just imagine what it'd be like to be like a young Sri Lankan or young brown kid. And you turn on your TV and you're hosting the show." And he said, "That's like something that you kind of didn't have when you were growing up, you know." And you know, I think it's a lot of pressure. It's you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but if you're one of a few people that's representing your community, there's a bit more pressure there, because then you feel like you're kind of, you know, if you're from a background that's massively represented, then there's less pressure on you as an individual because they're seeing lots of faces like yours. Whereas if you're one of three, or so, I don't, you know, whatever number it is, then it feels like there's a little bit more pressure, you know, and I yeah. think you have to kind of forget about that and just do the best you can, really.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, you know, in the UK you had not that much representation, because here we were looking at you guys, right? Like, you right. are our representation. I think the Australian South Asian stand-up scene was, it's still in its establishing phase. Like, I feel like there's so many voices that are getting amplified at the moment and doing amazing stuff. But I growing up, saw a lot of UK stand-up comedians who are South Asian. And that's where my idea of stand-up started. So, I mean, this is a very exciting time because, you know, there's so many more people coming, but there's not that many of us. And like you said, the pressure is on us. I'm one of two. There's me and my co-host who are running Spice. And that pressure, I mean, I kind of take it as a blank canvas, you know, because you have nothing to start off with. Why not make it as amazing as possible if it's just two of you, right?
Yeah.
So I see it that way. But yeah, definitely we were looking, growing up in Australia, I was looking outside of Australia for that kind of representation. In saying that, though, I think all South Asians have this amazing skill for storytelling, right? We're amazing storytellers, no matter how whack our stories are. We're great at telling them. And, you know, a lot of your stand-up material is based off the fact that you are amazing at telling stories. So how do you consider how well you're able to get a person immersed in the stories that you tell when you're writing your material?
It's a very good question. I mean, I think that one of the problems you've got as a stand-up comedian is that, you know, for example, if you came to see me do a show, yours and my life experiences, although we have some common ground because we're both from similar backgrounds, the truth is you're not a middle-aged father of three, right? So when I'm talking about what I'm talking about, there's a lot of it that, to be honest, you're not going to relate to, right? So when I'm talking, but the thing is, I can only talk about what I want, what I know, and what I understand. There's no point in me talking about stuff I don't know. So I have to talk from my point of view.
Yeah.
My job as a stand-up comedian is to get you, Sahela, to a point where you understand what it would feel like to be me, right? So even though you're not a dad, even though you're not, you know, you've not got kids or whatever, I've got to get you to a point where you can laugh at what I'm saying because you're thinking, I get where he's coming from, even though you haven't had those same experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's always the job, the job of a stand-up. It's easier for me to get somebody who's got the exact same life as me to laugh because they go, oh yeah, that happened to me like yesterday or whatever, you know? Whereas can I get somebody who's completely different? Can I get somebody that's with completely different background, with completely different life experiences to appreciate what I'm saying? And I think that's the key to it. And I think whenever I'm writing stand-up routines, really the audience help you, because sometimes when I try the routine out when it's my first written it, you can tell from the way the audience are reacting, maybe they don't understand what I mean by that, or maybe they don't quite get that bit. And then you've got to refine it, and eventually get to a point where the ideal world is that even if you've never been through what I've been through, you still get where I'm coming from when I tell that story, you know? And I think that's kind of the key to it.
Yeah, because you never know who's going to walk into the theater when you're performing, right? You just have to make sure that you're able to get them in your world and see what you're going through. Funny thing, you mentioned that, because like right before this, I was watching your video, your stand-up on talking about how you were potty training your kids. And then for me, I was just like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. But I was like, I'm not a middle-aged father of three kids.
Yeah,
so you're doing really well in that aspect, because it's just the humor. Everyone can kind of see you doing this, and that's where it comes from, is like, we're also seeing this happen in real time when you're able to tell these stories. So that's how they work so well. I think the one thing I love about your material is also how authentic it is. It doesn't feel, you know, glamorized. It also doesn't feel too exaggerated. At the same time, while remaining authentic, you have to also make sure that you're able to entertain people, regardless of who they are and where they come from and how they ended up in the theater that they're watching you in. So how are you grappling this push and pull between entertainment and authenticity?
I think it's another great question, by the way. I think for me personally, I think it's, you know, when I'm thinking about what I want to talk about, I mean, first of all, it is authentic in terms of everything I say has started in truth. You know, I might embellish it for the show, or I might add on to it, but it is all true thoughts or true things that have happened to me. I never really make anything up. Mm. But I think that for me, the way to make that entertaining is to really drill down into what I think about it. So, for example, me telling a story about potty training, you know, anybody could do that. But I'm the only person that can tell you exactly what my thought is on it and what I feel about it. And so part of being a stand-up, and I think a part of being any kind of like creative, is to go, how do I really, really, really feel about it? You know, what do I actually think about this? In my, you know, take away what I say to other people. What do I think about it? And a lot of the time, when I know that I've stumbled onto something good is when I feel like it might be embarrassing to say what I think out loud. You know, if I go, what do I think about this? And I think, oh, do I really want to tell people that that's what I thought? That normally means you're onto something good, because then that's, you know, a lot of the time people come up to me after a show and they say, you said something that I was too embarrassed to ever admit, but that's how I feel about it, you know? And I think that's the key to it. And actually that, what, you know, what that is to try and be as authentic as you possibly can and drill down into what you actually feel about something. But that's difficult. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult to put yourself out there. It's difficult to, you're pulled by an audience. And sometimes you think, well, it'd be funny if I said this, but then you go, but that's not really what I think, you know? So, you know, it's kind of a balance. And the truth is, I feel like I've got better at it as I've got more experience. There are things that I said when I first started out doing stand-up that I can tell you now that I just said because I thought they'd be fun, you know, I thought it'd be a funny thing to say. Whereas now, if you see me do stand up, almost pretty much everything I'm saying has come from something I've really thought or an opinion I really hold, you know. So that's kind of how I do it.
Yeah, I mean, keeping it real always works. And I mean, you never know how an audience is going to react, I guess, and it depends where. And especially, I mean, I have to say, Australians have a really good sense of humor, just saying, like, we handle our jokes pretty well. And but I can't say that about a UK audience or an American audience. I have to ask you, though, you come from a Sri Lankan family and you have three young kids yourself. Who have you found to be your toughest critics to impress?
Oh, I think it's my wife and children. They have got absolutely no interest in, you know, like, even I'll tell you a story. When I first started out, I don't ever do this now because I realized it was a mistake. But I used to say to Lisa, my wife, oh, what do you think of this idea? I had this idea. One day I was sat with her and I said to her, oh, I had this idea for a bit of stand-up. What do you think? And she said to me, it's unbelievable this. She said, I'm sure the people who like you would find that funny. I was like, that is what an incredible thing to say. So that was the last time I ever tried out material on her. And similarly with the children, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, obviously when I'm out and about with the kids, they I get recognized and people ask me for photos. They cannot understand why anybody would want a photo. They cannot, you know, like, you know, because they see their dad as you know, you see your parents as kind of, they've got to the phase now where they find their parents kind of embarrassing, you know?
Yeah.
So they do come and watch, you know. When I did I did the O2 in London on this tour that I've brought over to Australia, and they came to watch me. But they're watching me because they're like, oh, dad's doing this thing in front of loads of people. They're not interested in what the actual show. You know, they want to just come around, be shown around the venue. Yeah, exactly. So even like my oldest son is 15. He was on school holidays. So I was doing I was on tour. And so he came with me and he spent a few nights on the road with me. And he had a great time. He did not watch the show once. So what would happen is we'd go into the dressing room. We'd hang out and, like, you know, have a laugh. And then when I went to do the show, he didn't come and sit in the crowd. He just looked on his phone backstage. And then I came off and then we hung out again.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay. Well, I have to ask, like, you're probably the king of dad jokes, though, right? Like, dad jokes are those jokes that, you know, you're like, oh, whatever, dad, again.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, kids, I have been around a fair share of kids, and kids these days have no filter as well. Like, if your son was probably in his phone, if he was actually watching it, he would probably go and just be like, dad, did that work for you? Because I don't know.
I know. Well, yeah. I mean, my kids are very much, you know, I've got three boys and they're, all they do is roast each other. It's just all day, every day. Like, their love language is just absolutely hammering each other. We'll be getting ready to go out, and then they'll be going to each other. Imagine going outside with your hair looking like that. Imagine wearing that jacket on. Imagine wearing those clothes and being out in public. I can't even imagine what that would be like. Like, just constantly, constantly hammering each other.
I have to say, roasting is genetic, though, for South Asians. I watched your series with your mom during COVID, right? And Shanti, your mom. I mean, like, if there's anyone you get your humorous side from, your funny bone from, it's probably her, because that woman was roasting you left, right, and center, and your brother Dinesh as well. So I feel like roasting is one of those, it's a love language for South Asians, right?
It definitely is. And, like, you know, people, when we first put Mum in that show, you know, it's one of those things where I felt like Mum was really funny, you know, in the way that she talks to us. And
she didn't look like she was trying, right?
No, exactly. That's exactly it. She wasn't, she's just being, it's just literally how she normally is, but with a camera on her. And so, so we thought she'd be funny. And, like, my friend who was directing it, Ben said, I think she'd be really funny on it. And she's just, like, just constantly, like, hammering it. And people will say to me, oh, does she turn it on for the camera? And I go, no, if anything, she's being more polite because she's worried about it going out in public.
But I'm also like, this is a typical South Asian auntie I would meet. And, like, yeah, she would just make my day, because half the time I'm also deadpan. I'm like, all right, I don't know if I had to hear that, but I heard it.
Yeah.
Thanks, auntie.
I know. They are brutal. My mum is brutal about my appearance, about what she thinks of how I've done on a show. It's pretty full on, man.
For a long time, South Asians were also the butt of the joke in the comedy scene. I feel like, if I was, while you were, you know, rising to stand up in that time, a lot of jokes about South Asians would make us, like, you know, the punchline or the butt of the joke, right? I feel like today, though, South Asian stand-up comedians are flipping the script when it comes to how we are approaching comedy and how we are considered funny. In fact, we are now making ourselves the joke. Self-deprecating humor is always working for South Asians. Do you feel like there's a bright future ahead for us as South Asian comedians, you know, continue to find their voice and, you know, take up to more stages?
I think so. And I think that I think you think about, even as a South Asian comedian, when you start out, you know, you are talking to, depending on what sort of crowd you've got, but certainly when I started doing stand-up, majority of the people that are in the room are white people, you know. And so whatever you're saying, you are informing their view on us as people, you know, whether they think that's happening or not. They are getting they're getting an idea of what we are like from what you're saying on stage. And so, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I first started, you know, you make self-deprecating jokes, and sometimes you make self-deprecating jokes about your culture and people laugh. And then you sort of think, I wonder where that laugh is actually coming from. You know, I don't know how comfortable I feel about where that laugh is coming from. And so,
because it's like, are they laughing at you or with you?
Exactly. And I think sometimes you can play with that. And, you know, because sometimes, you know, our parents' accents and things they say are funny to us as well. You know, you're not just, you know, you're not like, you know, they say funny things. But I think that, like, I think that where South Asian comedy is, like, is at now is a position where, like you said, we're self-deprecating. I think that's a common trait in all of us. But I don't think we are. I think we're giving a better representation of ourselves. And I think that's always a positive thing because, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of where people of color are in Australia, but certainly in the UK, there are some towns you go to and it's full of brown people. And so, you know, white people know what it's like to be a part of a multicultural society. And so that you're not one of the only brown people they're hearing from, but there are some towns that I go to, and obviously, there are not many people of colour in that town at all. And so they've coming to watch you. And I feel like we're in a position where you are basically showing them what our people are like. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think you should get too caught up in that responsibility. But I do think it's worth thinking, this thing that I'm saying now, is this something that I am happy with the audience walking away from this show thinking, you know, like that's kind of, I think that's an important, and look, that comes secondary. The first, you got to think, how do I be funny, you know, or how do I be authentic and authentically funny? But then I do think there are some times when you can make a joke and you want to sort of figure out, I think you hit the nail on the head, where is that laugh coming from? You know, are they laughing at me or with me? And I think that's always a good question to ask.
Well, I mean, to have you be a leading voice on stand-up stages around the world is amazing, because people get to see you, and we're kind of breaking out of that, you know, that barrier of not reaching an audience in terms of what they want to learn from you as a stand-up comedian. Do they want to, you know, enforce more stereotypes and see that this person's making a joke about themselves? So that gives you the validation to do that as someone who's not South Asian. But I think your comedy has changed the way that we as a community can celebrate ourselves, because we're able to, you know, have a laugh at ourselves, but also be like, hey, like, it's normal to do these things, and this is just what it is to be South Asian. So thank you, Ramesh, for joining me for SBS Spice today.
No worries. Thank you for having me. Great questions. I'm very impressed.
Oh, thank you. And I hope you enjoy Australia and it treats you well. Make sure you try some Tim Tams. I had to say that.
I will do. I will do. My wife has been raving about Tim Tams. So she wants me to. She wants me to buy a second suitcase and film it with Tim Tams to take back. So.
Yeah, listen to Lisa this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that was Ramesh. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and thank you so much for joining us. If you like our stories, share them with your friends. Subscribe to SBS Spice wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an update. Find and follow us on Instagram at SBS Spice. We'll be back soon with another Chilling the Pod to see what makes South Asians tick or ick.